opens its job. Dean Cox again. This in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Lionel into a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. To Hue.
Capable of anything. To Hue. Equaliser for Leyton Orient.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever talent, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Orient Phoenix 98 FM. I'm Trevor Singfield, and joining me in the studio tonight, we have Kieran Heverson. How are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, Trev. Nice to see you.
Yeah, your voice is sounding a little bit croaky there. You've been singing too much at all these gigs you've been going to.
Yeah, I've been enjoying myself, yeah,
well,
thank you
very much.
Well,
that's what we like to hear. And alongside Kieran tonight, we have Darren Burrows. How are you, Darren?
I'm fine, thanks. Trev, you good?
Yeah, all good here. And on the buttons, we have the one and only Andy Gilson, who we will hear from a little bit later on, probably. Anyway, tonight we will discuss the last two matches versus Cheltenham on Saturday and last night's game versus Exeter. We've got the regular contributors as normal. Victor and Matt Roper will give them their views and rants from E10. We have a few snippets from Andy's commentary, as I just mentioned. We may chat about the season ticket and lottery schemes, but we also will preview the up-and-coming match versus Derby County, who play Wycombe Wanderers away tonight in their latest match for quest for automatic promotion. So we've got quite a bit to get through, but as always, we will start with what happened on Saturday. So on Saturday, home to Cheltenham, we won 3-1, goals through Bradgrave, Mill and Soteria. And Joe Nuttall got a consolation goal on the 90+7, which obviously upset the defence because they like a clean sheet. Well, at the start, I was sitting in the ground and it's funny, we're talking about goals of the season and the people around us, we were sort of scratching their heads and then all of a sudden two come along at once. So, good game, Karen, because you were there.
Yeah, no, it was nice to see some goals in front of the North Terrace. We don't often see that. And to see a couple of worldies was even better. Thank you very much, lads. So,
there wasn't
really much chance, I don't think, to talk about throughout the game. You know, there was bits and pieces, but wasn't really one to sort of for the memory banks, but other than really for the goals, in my opinion.
Yeah, they were good goals. But goal of the season so far for you?
Oh, crikey.
Now I'm putting you on the spot there now. Darren's thinking.
pretty sure there's going to be one early doors that I've forgotten all about.
Well, we haven't scored that many, so...
We'll come on to last night's goal later, but that'll probably be up there, won't it, as well?
Yeah, straight in from a corner. No, I liked Theo's at Bolton. I like Dan Adji's header at Portsmouth. I've watched that on a few times. And his goal against Bolton I thought was quite good. So there's some of the highlights. And obviously Galbraith's one against Portsmouth, which is a bit of a consolation. So come on to the starting lineup for Cheltenham. So we had Brilliant goal. We had a back four of Galbraith, Beckles, Cooper, James, Berio, if I'm saying it correctly because he's new to us. Brown was sort of holding. Soteria, Moncur and O'Neill and Edwards up front. Subs, goalkeeper was Howells. Jack Simpson made the bench. Hunt, Sanders, Ford, Pigger and Ajay. Well, Darren, I'm going straight into it. Jack Simpson. On 62 minutes of Pebbles, what do we think?
I liked him. I thought he did well. I thought he looked composed on the ball. And if we do lose Happy in the summer, and let's face it, there's a lot of rumours at the beginning. There are just rumours. I think he's an adequate replacement. And all good, Trevor, from my perspective.
When he came on, it was straight away you could see that he was happy to take control of the situation. And I had heard him, I remember hearing him shouting at Cooper to get up, get forward, get... And Cooper was obviously thinking, well, hang on a minute, I'm here first type thing. And you just hear him, like, lose it. Not lose it, but, you know what I mean, it was like a bit more forcefully say to Cooper, get up. And the next thing was Cooper was up. So I was like, I'm going to like this game. So, fingers crossed.
A lot taller than I expected. I know centre-halves are tall, but he's a bit of a presence as well. He doesn't lack pace either. I think he could, over 50 metres, he'd beat Happy at the moment.
I don't know.
I thought he was pacey. Are you right about this? I think that's probably the interviews, Trevor, isn't it? Because when we've seen him on the Orient Tube channel, he's probably sitting down. So... You don't really get to see them until they come out of flesh. And I don't know about you, but you don't pay a lot of attention before they're really in the squad, do you? You know, we knew he was in the building. We knew he could play. So we're probably not really... So, yeah, I agree with you. A lot taller than I thought as well.
Yeah, I was on sort of Simpson watch as soon as he come on, like Kerry said. Any concerns that he's only sort of played 70 professional matches? I mean, he's 26, 27
no,
years old.
I've got no concerns. I mean, he's played those professional matches at a higher level than what we're at. So, you know, I mean, if you sort of aggregate that out or whatever, that's, you know, it's probably going to be, you know, at our level, that would probably be about 100 or so.
Yeah.
So if you aggregate that out, but, you know, I've got no problem at all from my view.
Yeah, well, the other, it's gone, that's truly documented everywhere and the fellow has to carry it around forever, doesn't he? So we won't dwell on that here today. I will say... what Richie Wellens said, he says he's good on ball, and he also said, I think we've got a class player here, which suggests to me that he's already signed on the dotted line.
Well, I like to think so, and I'd like to think that he, you know, Orient have taken a punt on him, if you think about it, like you say, we're not going to go into the ins and outs of why he hasn't been playing, but he hasn't been playing, and Orient have taken a punt on him, and he seems to like him, and having met him very, very briefly... I do think that him and Richie is, you know, he's a Richie type player.
Okay, yeah, it's a good thing. So, Abirio started. What do we think of him, Darren?
Yeah, really likes him. One slight concern, I think he plays with his back to the goal a lot. But overall,
good point.
I'm not going to judge the lad on two games.
18 though.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So it'd be very harsh. I mean, that was the one... only because you want to see attacking football. Mm. I'm not criticising him for any other reason than I did notice last night, the first five touches, all back.
I agree with you, 100%. I play it all the time. It's noticeable.
But his composure again on the ball, his distribution, his strength... his willingness to work rate, Kieran said Richie type player. I think he fitted that mould.
Yeah, because he when we come on to listen to Richie in a little while, he's got some interesting comments on the bureau, and we can go on to that in a minute. So, also I took out, because we've not played Richie's Cheltenham in a minute, we thought we'd have heard that, but he also said Raw was sulky against Cheltenham. But there you go, I don't know. He sort of give him a little bit of thing, but Cheltenham playing for a game, they fell short, but fair play to them. Not like Burton and Bristol Rovers, anti-football, walks away with...
Well, I had their chances, Trev, didn't
they? Yeah.
You know, on another day, I think Richie said 8-5 or so, 8-5, I think.
Playground football, yeah.
It was a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It made for entertaining, and like you said, two goals of season contenders in one go.
Yeah.
I thought the second against Portsmouth would be my goal of the season, by the way. You didn't ask me.
Well, if you'll come to you, can any time you like, but you know that.
That's not like me, Trev.
Sorry about that, Andy. We've got an important call coming in. We've got to leave the building. I'm not too sure. Anyway, Richie Willens also said, and I quote, he said, next season started today versus Cheltenham. So he's already started his work, hasn't he? So
Yeah, I think if you look at the table, you know, I mean, there's a way that we're going to be able to catch catch that last playoff spot now. So I think it's the right thing to do. You know, I mean, you just scratch it off, start again, isn't it? So if you've got the opportunity, but the thing is, we're playing teams, aren't we, that have still got something to play for. We can still go for an automatic spot. We've got Fleetwood in a relegation scrap. So and Shrewsbury, I'm not quite sure where they are.
Dead rubber.
Table. Yeah, that's a dead rubber, yeah. I think, isn't it? Right. So you know, we've two out of the three that we've got left, they've got something to play for. So hopefully, you know, we'll go along and we'll show them that, you know, Leinor ain't going to be a pushover.
Well, you've got to respect the league, haven't you, as well.
That's it, you've got to respect the league and...
And just a final bit on Cheltenham, which did make me chuckle with Richie and Dave. I mean, he's very petulant, poor old Dave Victor, you know what I mean? He asked him a question and he just sort of swat him away like a fly. Like, why are you asking me that? I can't remember. It was about one of the people starting. No, where's Sweeney? That was it, because he didn't play against Cheltenham, did he? And he said, will he be back on Tuesday? We're doing this and that, as if it just absolutely meant nothing. I admire Dave for...
I was going to say that to you, Trevor. I'll give Dave credit for his professionalism and his ability to handle those type of responses. I'm with you.
It's something else anyway. Well, at the moment, we have just lost a man who presses the buttons. So we were going to go on to the extra game, but Dan just asked me, come up with a very good point about the EFL, what they doing down with...
I've had a message from a lad by the name of, let's get this lad's name correct, Chris Derry. Chris is a season ticket holder in the North Stand.
I know Chris.
And, okay, good. And Chris has made some really good points about moving people around. He's having to move. He's one of them. He's pretty upset by it. Understands the club's position, in fairness to him. Made some interesting points about people, for example, with learning difficulties who get very familiar in their space and their surroundings. And I must admit, Trev, it made me sort of quite more sympathetic. It's a real toughie, isn't it? Because the club really don't want to muck their... Of course, they don't want to muck their fans around. And moving 25 people was a logistical nightmare. And I just feel really that I feel sorry for Chris and his family. They've got to move. But I feel sorry ultimately for Mark Devlin, because how does he square this circle?
Well, that's it. But I think the family in question, they've been 15, 16 years going, haven't they? Also, ever since the North Stand's opened, I think they've sat in the same seats. We all get rather comfortable with...
In our environment.
I pretty can't understand why we are moaning about capacity anyway, that the EFL come and take seats. Can't the camera go anywhere else? Or
I agree. I think that... I'd like to think two things. I'd like to think that, first of all, the club will have done the logistics of whether it can. They'd have done the surveys. They'd have had a look at that. That's why I'm sympathetic. I do believe the club will be generally upset to have to move that number of people. I actually think that Mark and the characters that run the club now are the kind of people that have a connection with the fans. I am sympathetic, but I, like you, I'm very also upset for that people, because, why can't we put it on the bloody roof of the stand, excuse my French?
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot of open areas around there where they put up some decent scaffolding or whatever, and then you can put plenty of advertisement around the scaffolding and things like that. I mean, obviously, we'd have to ask Mark why and when, if next time we have him on the show, about where these cameras are.
I think we should, Trev. I think we should.
I think some of it is, if my knowledge of where Chris sits, I think it's because he's right at the back of the stand behind the goal, and because it's to do with the new EFL TV deal, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's something that it's not Leinorient's doing, it's the EFL's doing. So there's the edict that's come down. So they've got to find the space to put these cameras, and it is, it's awful. You know, I mean, Chris shouldn't have to move, but then we shouldn't have to have the cameras if we don't want to have the cameras. So, but then it's, you know, I mean, you're caught between a rock and a hard place, aren't you, really?
My understanding is that they have four cameras that we have to locate in the ground, and I'm guessing, taking, again, the logistics of putting four cameras in areas, as Kieran's point is very correct. Every ground I've ever been to, Trev, it's always directly behind the goal.
Yeah.
One of those cameras you can guarantee will be there. So I feel for the club, I feel for Chris's family, I feel for all the fans that are having to move. All I hope is that the club do their very best to accommodate them, and
yeah,
I'm sure
they can all stay together.
Yeah, that's the important thing, because like you say, you become a community, don't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, our little one, I mean, like you say, these are people who've who've passed on, it's very sad, do you know what I mean? We're only sort of four seats away, this, that, and the other, and then some fella does it, well, because he's 80 and he's retired from coming football, you know? It's, the only thing is like, because a lot, I think Steve Clark was a little bit worried, because you know, like when we have a game, you know, in a live game, other cameras, there's four, you get six or eight, and I think he always gets shoved along a little bit in the west stand, and he was a bit worried about that if he won there. But you know,
can't they have the little man on the, like, looks like the wheelchair or whatever, you know, with the camera and the thing over his head.
With all these drones and that, sure, they do that, can't they, anyway? Well,
I think as well, Trevor, I think one of the who works in
Alex Wright,
so maybe a question we can throw out to our own, one of our own, Alex, and see if Alex can perhaps put a bit of perspective on it as well.
He's at the Arsenal quite a lot, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
He does very well for himself. Anyway, so I'm glad you brought that up, Darren, and this does get sorted, because like I say, our little community we enjoy. So we're now going to go on to last night. We played Exeter City, drew 2-2. And we all know by now O'Neill scored direct from a corner, because it's been all over Sky Sports News today. So there you go. It doesn't happen often, but it counts. Matt Lockwood's the last one.
Oh, I remember that one. That was Southend away.
Is it? Oh, well done. There you go. I wouldn't remember that at all. But and then Moncur tapped one in, took it off Piggott's foot, maybe. Who knows? But then Orient sadly went down to 10 men due to injury. And Exeter got a couple of late goals. Anyway, we lined up Bryn, Hunt, Beckles, Simpson and Sweeney. So Simpson started the game, and we've already discussed him. Galbraith, Sanders and Brown in midfield. Sartorio, Piggott, O'Neill were the forwards. The subs were Howes, the keeper. Cooper, who changed with Beckles at half-time, probably a plan switch to see how they play together. Then James replaced Hunt, replaced James. James reminds, I'm motor racing now, I've gone all over. So Moncur he replaced Sanders. Iberio coming early, that's a talk there, because he's got a calf according to Richie. And Edwards was a new sub, and James come on for Piggott. So now we're going to listen to Richie, and then we will discuss afterwards what he had to say.
Join us, an eventful evening. What did you make of it?
Well, I thought, listen, it wasn't a great game in terms of quality. Too many turnovers from both teams. Both teams out of possession. I see us first half. We were near it, but we always afraid when the ball turned over and when we got the ball. So I think obviously when you go to a 3-0 lead and we go down to 10 men, you look at the men, a problem, but it can only be a small problem. But with the personnel that we had on the pitch with them 10 men, it was lack of experience. You look at the midfield four, Dan Agi, George Moncur, Zeca Piro's never played in a professional game against 10 men before, and Ethan Galbraith, you've got O'Neill, and it's like you couldn't pick a worst 10 players. So Brandon's coming off injured, and we have to play with 10 is a big turning point of the game.
It certainly was. What is the extent of the injury for Brandon?
Ruel's on his calf, Brandon hamstring. So, played at Pride Park on Saturday. Do you fancy a game, Dave?
Looks that way, doesn't it? I think you're
not good enough, George. Oh, no, Dave might be. I've seen you play. No, listen. I think they picked up two or three injuries again. It's just the schedule. The schedule is, and the amount of extra time and games we played this year. Every single club seems to have picked up a lot of injuries. So, to lose two important players is obviously not.
I suppose it is rescuing all the substitutes.
Well, you never. We always wanted to give Dan Agi half an hour, and the fact that a couple was enforced obviously means that we run that risk. But I said, if it was a meaningful game, I want the same mindset. Okay, we've got players out of contract. I want to get to a certain level in the league like next year. I want to improve in certain things. Can you show enthusiasm? Can you show passion to play? Can you listen to instructions? On Saturday, we were very, very good. A bit sloppy in the last 15 minutes. But there's some players who are just not doing it, not improving. So we've got some big decisions to make in the summer.
Ollie O'Neill, I think he's the first Leighton Orient player to score direct from a corner since Matt Lockwood. Was something he was intending?
I have no idea.
That's him. But I remember Matt Lockwood, beautiful left foot, good player. So, no, I wouldn't imagine. If you whip it in a dangerous area with pace, then always have a chance, but I wouldn't imagine that he was intending on doing it.
And George Moncur took his goal well?
Very good, and then obviously the game's pretty comfortable for us, and every turnover we look like scoring, but, yeah, we just... I mean, just the bodies, the lack of bodies that we have now is... It was severe, it's extreme now.
Some good saves from Sol Brin.
I thought Sol was good. I thought there was some good performances. However, our game management and just our, when you play with 10 men against there, when they're throwing bodies forward and you haven't got the energy to get pressure on the ball, it's fine. Well, then stay in your shape and don't follow runners. Slide, make sure the gaps are small. And then when a midfield player runs and you go into a back five, just pass him on. We're following runners, and it's honesty. It's just young naivety, if you like, but it's just an honesty where they're tracking runners, and because they've tracked that runner, and now have a midfield player and a centre-half marking one player, we're already down to 10, and then holes and gaps start to appear. And the right and the left winger who come on cause a few problems because we haven't obviously got a defensive right back at that time. Well, I could obviously put TJ out there, but I've got no one else to play centre-half, so yeah, it just causes there's one issue after another.
Derby need the points. How are you going to approach that game?
Yeah, let's see what Keats can do. It'll be a patch-up team. We might give a few more young players an opportunity, but we'll get in training tomorrow. We'll see the extent of the injuries, and then I think Beck should be fine. Pratt should be back in the squad. But apart from that, it's going to be a threadbare. We might have to pick probably one more attacker than we would like to, but, you know, Keon and Dan will come back in the squad. Keon might come back in the team, so let's see.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
And there we go, that was Richie Wellens talking to Dave Victor after last night's game. So a couple of little things I picked up straight away last night. For the life of me, I know we all get passionate about the game, two late goals. Richie was still confronting the opposition's bench last night at the final whistle, and I couldn't see any beef at all. Why? When the way I thought we conducted the last was 14, it was 21 minutes with the added or 20 minutes with the added time with 10 men, and he's straight in the face of Caldwell and the other people over there, and I just didn't see any reason. There wasn't no confrontation on the benches last night watching the game. You know, you get somewhere they're all in each other's faces, but it was a bit of a bad show. I mean, you know, we're disappointed.
I don't know if there's any little niggles maybe just sort of being whispered across or whatever.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I think you're right though.
I think generally from looking at social media and all the managers on there, people can't seem to understand that we've done this at Wigan, Barnsley and now Exeter at home. 10 men let it slip, and it appears that whose fault is it? Is it Richie's fault or is it the player's fault? What's their thoughts on that? Because it seems pretty split sometimes that they're not getting the instructions correctly, what he's trying to do. I mean, I guess you don't waste your time in training trying to see out a game with 10 men. You're trying to win games, aren't you? But I just wonder what your thoughts are, because not a lot appears to be Richie's fault ever. Okay.
What do you mean?
And I know, you know, but where do we feel?
Well, do you remember Terry Venables after the fiasco with the dentist chair in the World Cup on the lead up to the Euros?
Yeah.
And he came up with a classic, we take collective responsibility. Now, what he meant by that, it's all our fault. and I felt that Richie last night in his interview, I got a bit of sympathy for him in terms of I did feel that the players are not taking instructions on Trev. But I also felt it wouldn't have done him any harm at all to have said, and of course I'm at fault because I took that gamble and it didn't pay off. Because he took that gamble, he sort of brushed over it a bit, didn't he?
But, you know, I mean, he still took the gamble, but I think some of it was forced on him from what, you know, I mean, I wasn't there last night, as you all know. But, you know, Ruel picked up an injury, so there was a, you know, cause, you know, I'm sure they had a game plan and they thought, right, okay, we know we'll swap Cooper for Beckles at half time or whatever, and we'll swap whoever, after 60 minutes. So he had a couple of, you know, I mean, I get both sides, you know, I mean, I'm sort of like, I'm in Switzerland here, I feel like, because it's like, I get both sides, you know, that Richie hadn't planned, you know, he had Tuiu pick up an injury, and the reason we went down to 10 men was because he'd already played the five that he had, and then Cooper picked up an injury, so there's no one
that
there.
That was the gamble, that's what I'm saying, he didn't hold one back, and let's face it, if there was anything on that game, he wouldn't have done that.
But then, when was the last sub? 65 minutes, was it? 60, 65? 66. Oh, well, what a good guess.
And we got the injury in 76 minutes.
Yeah. So you would like to think 15 minutes wouldn't be too bad, but then 15 minutes, or in 15 minutes, it's...
To another point, Trev, that we can't play our games against 10 men. Yeah? I agree with that.
With 10 men... against 11. We got 10 and we're against their 11.
Yeah.
We're not seeing games out. When we're trying to see the game out, we've...
Sorry, that's what I meant. When we're down to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. The I remember Martin Ling, when he was manager, said that he always still played two up top. Now, the game's changed. We know that. Yeah. But if he'd have left Aggie up top, he draws two defenders out straight away. So I think, I'm going to say it, I think it was tactically naive.
No, this is what we're all saying. We were sitting back, sitting ducks. I mean, you know, we can say it's like the old Orient of old. You know it's coming. But we were all sitting there going, even when he went off, we go, and as soon as he put that line up, I said, we should go on there and go put 2-2 on Betfair or whatever, you know, you're chosen betting at in the ground, because you can do that, can't you, you know? And we're all sitting there and just...
We knew it was coming, didn't you?
Yeah, we're fans, like, I mean, but we all know everything about the other. But at Wigan, it was the same. You knew the ball was coming, and at Barnsley was a bit different, because we could have been 4 or 5 down anyway at half time if it weren't for Sol Brin, you know. And I thought Barnsley on the day did deserve to win, even though we took the lead through Satorio. But he starts saying, "I've got these players along the line. You've got to run." Sometimes I'm thinking to myself, "What are you talking about?" Because he's telling us you've got these runners that, I mean, I don't understand football the way they do, but if he's waving his arms and like this, that, and the other, we see that he's like the policeman in Rome and this, that, and the other. And the fans must have been just like, the players must be thinking, oh, what am I meant to be doing here with this, that, and the other? But I'm with you. Put even two up top, it means you've got three back, and it stops a wide bloke. Then, I mean, the bloke, Exeter got it right, they put a bloke on the line, fed him. And it was just like one-way traffic.
I was just going to say, I mean, I know this is Orient Hour, but when Tottenham recently, didn't they? They sort of, you know, they played from the front, didn't it, really? And it's when they, I think they didn't have a couple sent off, and then it was like, it all just sort of went, and then everybody was sort of like, oh, why didn't they get everyone behind the ball? And it was just a great game to watch.
I think it was against sort of some Chelsea or West Ham, one of their rivals.
Chelsea. Yeah. They lost two players. I was at the game.
Yeah.
They lost two players. And,
but they played from the front, didn't they?
They carried
they were
on
down.
The same style of play, you're right, they did. They didn't change their tactics. I just feel as well, with when you should practice that in training, Troy. You should have practice games where you're playing 10 against 11. You should.
If he wants to find himself in that situation and say, look, this is how, it's a blueprint of, like, if we go down to this situation, you're right, Dan, we can do this, isn't it?
You know? And also, because we play a high press, and part of our game is to not close opposition down quickly, that's why we've got the second worst disciplinary record in the division. It's not to do because we're losing our heads all the time, like people are saying. It's because of the style of play we're adopting. So we're going to have scenarios under Wellings where we do go down to 10 men. Yeah. It's going to happen.
Well, it's happened 4 or 5 times, isn't it?
Yeah. Prepare for it.
They've got more experience now, haven't they, of playing with 10 men, so fingers crossed they'll know what to do next time.
I mean,
if there is one.
The only thing with Richie, I mean, he's constant complaining about the depth of the squad. I mean, he could do with changing the record. We all know Richie that, I mean, every single manager in League One, Championship, or wherever, not even Sunday morning, wants a bigger squad, don't they, you know?
He did acknowledge that lots of clubs have had injuries. Because I agree, again, that it's starting to grate a little bit that we've had lots of injuries. Well, you talk to any Portsmouth fan who are top of the league, yeah, they've had loads of injuries. Every other, I've got a friend at work, Northampton fan, They've had loads of injuries. It's the modern game.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
Where I think his gripe is the squad has let him down. So when he's had the injuries, when we haven't got that, when we've got that problem, our depth of the squad has not been sufficient, which he has a point.
It's true, yeah, he has got a point, but it's just sort of, every time I sort of listen to him, and we listen to every single interview he does, it's that, and like I said to her, it does appear that Richie never makes a selection mistake or a tackling mistake. It's just always seems it's the part of
the The last time he forgot it was on him was Stevenage when we were at Stevenage. So I do again concur and agree that he does, I wouldn't say throw the players under the bus, but I just think a little bit of collective responsibility last night would have been, wouldn't have gone amiss.
It wouldn't have gone amiss. Exactly that. Well, last night, Andy was at the ground and... you may well know that many, many years Andy used to do the commentary for the games, and he's got a good knack at it. So he sort of wanted to keep his voicing, should we say. So he's now going to play a little snippet of last night's game.
Puts it out wide again towards O'Neill. Into the box, gets it right across there. Another to the floor by Sinsalo. Good move that from Orrin. Ball given away cheaply. Now Orrin can get the break on here, perhaps. O'Neill. Sweeney. Rather wasted his cross. And he'll have a corner for it. So corner. On the far side. The hand goes up. The ball comes over. And it's gone straight in! It's gone straight in! The keeper was motionless till the last moment. His arm went up. Beckles may get a claim on that, but I think he went straight in from the corner. Disastrous goal to concede for Exeter City with 10 minutes left in the first half. It's Leighton Orrin who take the lead. Ball given away badly now. Into the box. There's a chance for number two, and it is number two for Leighton Orrin. What a disaster at the back there for Exeter City. The ball given away so cheaply. My goodness me. Gift wrap goal for George Moncur, the Orient substitute, who's side-footed home. Oh, real kamikaze stuff from Exeter City. Only O'Neill gifted the chance to square that across, and I doubt George Moncur will score a simpler goal all season. Burst forward here from Exeter, a bit of room in the box. Over it comes, there's the header, and it's a goal! And Exeter right back in this, it's been coming. Terrible marking from Orient. And Exeter City right back in it with a header from Ali, I think. So, a corner to Exeter. 6 minutes of stoppage time to be played. As the cross comes in now, knocked away this time by Agi. Still pressure. It's all Exeter City now. Ball in round the back. They could be in here for the equalising goal. It's, oh, my goodness me, it took a deflection. I think off of Sweeney at the death, there was a sliding foot out there. And it sent it away from the corner. It was certainly goal-bound. Another chance for a cross. Look at the space here for Tom Carroll. And it's gone in. He's taken a deflection. It's the equalising goal with 5 minutes of stoppage time to play. And it's been coming. It's 2-2.
Well, there you go. That was Andy last night. Giving us... plenty of obviously the clippets he's put for the goals, but Andy, how many years did you actually do the gantry for this?
31
years, and 31. I think we've had this conversation before privately, and well, we've had a beer or something. But weren't you sort of basing your commentary skills on the great late Brian Moore?
I think it's a combination. You when you're growing up, you don't learn from what's on the television or the radio. And I always said to people that on the radio there was a great commentator who sadly died whilst commentating on a boat race called Peter Jones. And for me, an absolutely fabulous commentator. And when I was a little boy, I used to record on a reel-to-reel all the midweek sports specials, you know, and used to have Maurice Eddleston with Peter Jones and Alan Parry and people like that, and you'd learn from that on the radio, and then on the television, of course, you had Brian Moore, who was, you know, for me, the best television commentator at all. So a little bit of a mixture of those people, you had your own little bits in as well. So you learn from your mentors, don't you? And then add your own personality in, I suppose.
So at young age, you had these aspirations to be a commentator.
But you know what? We're digressing just for a second here. When I saw a friend live around the corner to me with a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and we lived on a London road. We had two buses that used to come up the road, red buses, 87 and a 174 in Howard Hill. And you could see right down to Gallus Corner from my house, but you couldn't see what the bus numbers were. And we used to play bus football. So one of us would be the 87s and one of us would be the 174s. And we'd have 10 minutes each way on this tape recorder and say, well, there's a bus coming round the corner. Oh, it's a 174, you know. So it was bus football. But crazy times, yeah. Well, but that was my first ever commentary doing bus football, would you believe?
There you go. So you actually done some, didn't you? You go down to Southwest TV or something?
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky. I was doing Orient, and a firm called TSM were filming Orient, and they recommended me to the head of sport in ITV in the West Country, and went down to see him, and I think at the time it was 1999 to about 2006, and they moved the night of the program from a Sunday to a Monday, and then they moved it into a Thursday, which meant, you know, as they said, it's now becoming an interview-based program because there's no point. Everyone's seen the goals so many times. So they didn't. They got rid of all their commentators, and that was just after the World Cup of 2006. And but it was a good experience. And, all is never what you think on the television. I can tell you a little thing. I was at a craft fair in Bromley in a field, and they rang ITV, and they said, hi, and they said, we need a report from Swansea City against Torquay. I said, well, I'm in the field in the middle of Kent. And they said, well, it doesn't matter. We'll tell you who scored and how the goal was scored. Can you ring in and do it as live? So I had to nip out the back of this marquee that we were in. And my wife was running the craft for it. And I ran around the back of the tent, basically. And I'm in there going, well, the winning goal came in the 85th minute. Blah, 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 blah. And on the television screen in Devon, of course, you got my name and the thing and the picture of the vetch field at the time at Swansea. And I thought, what a load of codswallop. You can never believe what you get told on the television. But, good fun. And, I mean, in Orient, we had, you know, wonderful times and wonderful memories.
Yeah, any ones that stick in the mind of...
bloopers. Some put up a really old one that was Grimsby, like, Neil, and... we were attacked, myself and Steve Jenkins, by a wasp. And this wasp didn't go away, and it got me. And I didn't mean to swear, but, you know, effing wasp. And that came out on the tape, you know. The worst one was we played Birmingham City. I'm sure you were there, Trev. And the second leg of a whatever the trophy was called.
Auto windscreen,
you know. Trophy or whatever, and I think we'd lost 1-0 at our ground in front of about 26,000 or something, and the second leg was about 10,000 at our ground, and they gave Birmingham the whole of the west side, and so Steve and myself were on the gantry, and we got well beat in the end, obviously, and they're all singing their "Keep Right On to the End of the Road" and everything all the way through the match, and when the match finished, we looked down, and all around us was money. And these Birmingham fans had pelted us throughout the match with coins, and we didn't even know because they all missed. But there were so many. And Steve, who's the most docile, Steve Jenkins, if people know, he runs a song thing, the most docile man you'll ever meet, he absolutely just exploded. And he ran down the gantry, and I followed him down. And all the Birmingham fans were getting their coaches. And as we walked up the stairs towards the coaches, Steve was, the expletives were coming out, and there was a half-eaten meat pie there. And he called them bees and flung this meat pie at the... and it splattered all over the coach. But that used to happen if I did HTV, ITV West at the time, if I did anything for them at the vetch field, it with coins. Because they HTV stood for Hate the Vetch reason. But there you go. But plenty of memories, wonderful times. And you miss it, but there you go. Yeah, life goes on.
It's good to hear you doing it again, though, Andy. Anyway, so taken away from that, I think we will listen to what Dave Victor's had to say this week about E10.
In all my years following the O's, I can't recall a season like this in terms of injury. And it's set to continue until the end. Brandon Cooper and leading marksman Will Soterio, the latest to join a long casualty list that includes Dan Happy, Jordan Graham, Theo Archibald and Idris Elmazouni, each of whom would be in contention for a place in the starting 11 for Saturday's trip to Derby. Until Cooper's departure on Tuesday night, which left the O's to battle on with just 10 men, having used all the substitutes, it appeared that Richie Welland's side were on course to gain back-to-back home wins for the first time since September. But the informed visitors seized on the opportunity to extend their unbeaten run to 7. There was plenty to enjoy in Saturday's victory over Cheltenham, not least 2 goals surely worth considering for the goal of the season competition that's coming up soon. At this stage, I would suggest that Ollie O'Neill's magnificent first half curler and Will Soterio's powerful late drive amongst the best we've seen. Ethan Galbraith's strike against Peterborough and Soterio's dramatic winner on that magnificent night when we beat Northampton are amongst my contenders. With our future in the third tier secured, this is the stage of the campaign when younger players get their chance to impress, and Zecha Biero has definitely done that. It was a composed and confident performance against Cheltenham, which deserved his Man of the Match award, and on Tuesday night the teenager demonstrated his ability to fight and win important tackles. It was nearly the anniversary of that astonishing night in North Kent, when defeat at Gillingham was greeted with such joy. The O's back in North 1, the 6-year plan complete. Having recently listened to the complete series of the Circus Upstairs podcast, which charts those dark days under the previous regime, it's a true labour of love by Matt Simpson and James Masters. It provides a timely reminder of just how far our club has come. On that bizarre and glorious night in Gillingham, promotion secured. Those fortunate enough to be there would be dreaming of the prospect of League One and a trip to Pride Park, which would surely be considered one of the many highlights. And on Saturday, of course, we travel to Derby to face a team that has won 4 of their last 6. The Rams will be determined to overcome Peterborough and Bolton to join Pompey, those precious automatic promotion places, and a long-awaited return to the Championship. But you can be sure that despite those notable absentees, Richie Wellens will want his patched-up team to upset Cowden's plans.
Well, there you go. That's Dave Victor with Victor's View this week. So, interesting as always. Right, we're going to have a little bit of Supporters Club news with Karen. And I do believe we've got an owl night coming up. Is that correct?
We do have an owl night, and it's the first Thursday in May, which I do declare is May...
I think it's May the 9th.
It's May the 9th, it is. Thank you very much. Yeah, May the 9th, doors open at 4. All welcome. Come and taste some of our award-winning owls. And we are about to be presented with the East London Camera Club of the Year again. Much.
I suggest we have to get there early for the last game of the season. I think it probably
Last game of the season. We've got one more game left. Yee-hee, before we can have a rest. So we'll be doors open midday for the Fleetwood game as usual, and we'll be open after the game until the beer runs out, basically.
Okay, then. And next season's membership is that this is a start warning, people.
Oh yeah, this is a start warning. I want to have a break. I want to have a break. I want to have some time off to myself when it's closed season. Please do not message me about your memberships. If you are a 3 member and you think you've got another left on your membership, when your renewal comes through, your new card will come through. But if you don't get a new card, then send your money in. Otherwise, if you're not sure, just come and see me on the first game of the season or the first home pre-season game. Don't worry about it. You're not going to bite your heads off at the Supporters Club. But at the same time, you know, let me have a break. It is a voluntary role, after all, and I've got my own work and family life that I want to fit in the 3 months I get off. So, rant over.
Well, you don't have to rant with us because everybody knows how the work that goes in that club, and like you clearly say, it's all voluntary, and they do a fantastic job. So give Kevin a little bit of break. So anyway,
I'll second that.
Yeah, I mean, we're now going to go on to maybe a little rant. I don't know, but season tickets. Have you renewed yet?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for payday to come by. So
Darren,
no, I haven't. I'm going to. And I like the figure for mine, Trev. It's 4, 5, 6, even I can remember that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is that, chatting away, I've been recently, and people I know, early deadline. Do we agree or not agree with it? The reason I say, because, all right, watching Orient, you've got a choice. You can go your home games, like us, we do a mixture of home and away. May deadline, I believe if you're going to play it outright, it's quite early. And I know we've got this cap season cards again. I guess the club want your money as quick as possible. But the reason I say is I've got a friend of mine whose wife's been ill, and he doesn't know whether he wants to...
Commit. Yeah.
And that extra thing going into June, late June normally, would have been very important to him. I mean... Just wanted your two's opinion on this. I think it's very early because, like, the season ends in 1 month and then you've got to commit again instead of two. I mean, am I being picky? I don't know.
My view on it is I like the fact that there's the early deadline and that I can secure my seat. But I would have liked a bit more than one and a bit paydays to be able to sort of, you know, regularly save up for it. Yeah, okay, I know it's coming. But it usually turns up, like you say, June. So then I've usually got May's payday and maybe June's payday. So maybe if they'd have sort of said at Christmas, we're going to do an early, you know, an early birthday and get your things in, get your applications in by the end of August or whenever, then yeah, it would have been ideal. Just a little, you know, it's a bit of a bugbear I have with the club for a lot of things, and it's communication and timing, you know. Understand that there's a living crisis out there. Understand that some people work, and, you know, they can't do everything and can't commit everything all the time. You know, that's my gripe, is the fact that, you know, they just don't give us any time. They expect us to have, you know, I buy tickets for my family of four and my mum and my sister. You know, I mean, okay, mum and sister give me the money back, but the kids don't, definitely. And Mark, you know, Mark and I sort of stump it up between us. But that's over $1,000.
Yeah.
And I can't just lose that in a month or 2 months. So, you know, I mean, it just would have been quite nice.
Yeah,
so.
I thought what you said there, if they said at Christmas, going forward, we are going to have an earlier deadline, it's sort of a lot of people went, ooh, really?
Yeah, and then, like, if I'd got any money for Christmas, I could have put that aside and whatever else, you know?
Darren?
Yeah, I understand the reason the club are hitting the nail on the head, Trevor. It's to get the money in. The real reason is it's the price of success, isn't it? It's because we've now got this waiting list, which, let's be honest, not having any of us four in here today would have ever thought Orient would have a waiting list for season tickets.
No, that's 100%, because it normally gets the deadline goes to about July, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to the people like Karen who are paying out a lot of money for four. But I also understand the clubs need to get the coffers filled up as quickly as possible.
Well,
one other thing is if you're sort of taking all that money in April or May, then, you know, what money have you got coming in June, July, that normally got then to, you know, think about? So
haven't you heard
it's
pre-season?
Pre-season against Averley, great. Yeah, another thing, which is also from people who've got in touch with me, this ticket exchange. I know the club has put something out, but not a lot of people may know this. They put this ticket exchange and they beat on about it, but the people who sold their tickets have not been credited with the money. They have to email the club, this, that and the other. And we have Mark Devlin and co giving us this. I've got Nigel Travis's propaganda in front of me. This is basics. This ticket business is basics. We had Jimbo moaning he couldn't even renew his ticket on the phone because of software problems, this, that and the other, you know. They want your money that quick. This is, in my opinion, if we want to be where we want to be, this ticket lark has got to be sorted promptly.
Well, I have to say, I used the ticket for yesterday's game for the first time. And I was always a bit loath and I was like, oh, no, everyone keeps moaning about it. It takes so long, whatever. It was about 4 clicks. I got an email and the email said basically, if we sell your ticket, you will be credited £15. They didn't sell my ticket, I've not been credited. So, but it took 4 clicks and it's like, I mean, even my mum was 80 but managed to work it out. So
I think the problem is not being credited. I mean, my friend lives in Gloucester and the ongoing problems, he sold a lot of tickets. And so he wants to pay it for next year, but then it's the grief that poor old Lindsay, whoever's doing it, is probably going, oh, not again. I'm feeling for the staff.
Like you say, it's that is, you know, it should be basics. But then if they've missed so many games, maybe they're thinking, well, if we're crediting him for all these games, is it going to exceed the cost of a new seat? So...
It does.
So, yeah, so that might be the issue.
That's a loophole that
Orient
have got to shut, but he's not guaranteed to see every game. I mean, and the other thing I get in, and it's happened to me, the scanners. I don't think they totally work, because my son goes with me. We go everywhere together. We've been every home game together. He's one behind me. Now, if it comes to the 23rd game and you don't get your discount for next season, how can I prove?
That's right.
That's that. So...
It's like with the scarf as well. You know, I mean, I didn't get the email about the scarf until after Cheltenham's game. But like yourself and Liam, I've been to every game. Yeah. The only one game that I've missed before yesterday was the FA Cup game. So that wasn't on the season card.
So, I think
the people using the scanners maybe need to be a bit more...
I know, this is our...
attentive.
Instead of a Ropers event, which is coming up very soon, just... People coming up to you, you know, your general chit-chat in the pub supporters club, and a lot of people quite angry about it, to be perfectly honest, because they want a streamlined thing. And you know yourself, you can buy a train ticket, walk into the station with your eyes shut. I know, putting it on the exchange, but when you go there, you think, well, I've got 80 quid for my ticket exchange. I only need, you said, well, yours 4, 5, 6.
Four, there? Five, six,
so there you go. So I won't try and do a mess on live on radio, but you get one of these simple. And, you know, I'm one of these people that just goes down to the supporters shop and buys me tickets because I can. But I've also heard people have bought Derby tickets and been posted out within 2 weeks. I mean, I've got to be honest, that's a bit of a shambles, personally, you know, because...
It has improved a little bit, Trev. It was really, really bad
at one point. Yeah, it's improved
My mate Davey, I sit next to, dude, and he said he got his credit.
Yeah, that's good.
Hopefully it's a sort... The rest of the Orient fans out there that have had problems.
Yeah, good. That's good news. Anyway, we're now going to have Ropers around, and I can promise you he's not thinking about tickets.
Two more injuries, finish with 10 men, chuck away 2 points, and watch yet another team celebrate as they've just turned over Barcelona in the Camp Nou. I hate football sometimes. This season's annoying me now. No, not the performances and the results. But with us not going down and having no playoffs to play for, we might as well just sack off the last 3 games. Yeah, let's go full Sunday league and just not turn up. What are the EFL going to do? A few years back, we played out 10 minutes of a game against Colchester like a five-a-side kickabout. And earlier this year, we were ordered to replay a game against a team that wouldn't have scored in a month of Sundays. Yet come the rearrange game, they snuck in for a galling victory with a few minutes to go. So yeah, let's not turn up. Save putting another 5 in the treatment room and get ready for next year. After all, it's going to be like the Alamo at Derby on Saturday, isn't it? And then it'll be another 3,500 crowd, a home to relegation-threatened Fleetwood, before the worst dead rubber, get your flip-flops on, final game away to Shrewsbury. Or is it Shrewsbury? I don't know. Who cares? Saturday was too easy. We didn't get out of first gear and turned Cheltenham over 3-1 before not getting out of second gear in the first half last night and 1-0. Some fans have had a bit of a moan about us dropping so deep last night that we had 4 defenders in the front row of the south stand. And yes, it was annoying, but it would appear that the management team were not advocating such tactics. Wanted us to play a far more normal game, even when we lost Cooper to a hamstring injury, having made all 5 subs. The odd wins about always keeping a sub in reserve is just not on. No one can predict that you'll lose another player having sent 5 on from the bench, and that's just down to plain old bad luck. Injuries this year have started to grate on all of us. Yes, every team gets them, and as I said last week, it has to be a factor but not an excuse. But we've used up our 9 lives in that area of professional football this season. And to see Soterio and Cooper both hobble off is just taking the absolute. So just how do we approach Saturday at Pride Park in front of 32,000 home fans baying for blood and a runner-up spot for a return to second-tier football? I'm not really sure on that one. You could always build a brick wall in front of Solving's goal. But let's just make sure we don't hire the bloke that did the wall at Tiverton in 94, or we'll be 6-0 down in 11 minutes. For me, and I'm sure a few of you, it's a free hit. Bit like an old FA Cup game against the fish. Go there, give it a real go, and play this for free. Let's face it, the pressure is on the Rams. A defeat for us is far less problematic than a defeat for them with Bolton breathing down their necks. Can we go there and get a result? Well, did anyone think we'd go to Fratton Park and come away with 3 points, having schooled them in their own backyard? The difference here, though, is that we haven't got quite the same personnel to effect a bit of a shock. Dan Agye is still overturning slowly. Elmizzi's out. Ford's got on the missing list. And we now have a bit of a crisis in the centre of defence, where if we lose another one, you might as well play a bald member. And you couldn't do any worse than stick Matt Porter in. 7'8" and bound to win headers. Saturday should hopefully be good fun, though. A massive sell-out crowd where players like Abiru are going to have to revel in the occasion, having only ever played in front of 3 men and a dog. Even massively injury hit, we can win the game. It'll be a chance for a very large number of us to get a new ground in, and I suspect we'll be a bit noisy, especially when our third goal goes in courtesy of an Ollie O'Neill 35-yard screamer. Thanks to all those that have bought an April issue of the fanzine, we have 28 copies left, and they'll be on sale at Derby for anyone who has yet to pick up a copy or wants something to do in the second half if we do find ourselves 5 goals down at the break. See you all Saturday, and up the mighty, mighty O's.
There you go. There's Matt there. I thought that was a good rant this week, Matt. Anyway, so, Derby away. What do we know about Derby away, eh? Pride Park. Anybody know the capacity?
It's about 30,000, Trevor.
It is 33,595. And it was opened in 1997, and this is Jones' first visit. And doing a bit of research today, it was opened by a Manchester City Queen. And, yeah. So okay. They've done quite well there. And there's reception is a plaque commemorating that. So she accepted the invitation to open the news surrounding the Rams, because there's a big retail park there and all that. But, yeah. I actually have seen a game there. I see them play Barcelona in a friendly. And their first match was a friendly against Sampdoria, and Derby lost 1-0. They originally played at a baseball ground from 1895 to 1997. The head-to-head, we haven't fared too bad at Derby. You know, you get some teams where you've won once or twice. We've played, well, we have 18 wins, and we've lost 23 and drawn 8, so pretty even. Not
too bad.
So, can you remember the last time we played them at a baseball ground? I didn't go. But I was supporting the O's at the time.
Were you alive? Yeah. So
Yeah. We played them. We last played them.
74.
No, it was 84. 15th of December. Probably the old third division. And our last win there was 29th of August 1981 on the opening day of the season. Now, this is a piece of one of my horrible quiz questions if we were doing it. Name the scorers.
Oh, 1981?
Yeah. Nice sunny day. Winning at the base.
Ian Moores.
Ooh, close. No, it was Peter Taylor and Billy Jennings. So, right, I've just been a load of hand-waving from Andy. Quick prediction, please.
4-0, then.
Oh, no. I go for a loss, but I don't think we're going to win, so I'll say Gatland.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a harsh environment, I think, and I'm pretty sure we're going for 3-0. Anyway, thanks for listening, and as ever, up the O's. Whatever challenge, whatever tip, and lay an even from a 10, lay an all even from a 10. This is our club, we are proud. So sing it up, sing aloud. We performed in 1881, the Claps and Orient, and so begun. The story on it. Lay an orange from E10. Whatever challenges come our way, the orange faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. Lay an orange from E10. Lay an orange from E10. Yeah. We will live to fight another day. Lay an orange from E10. Lay an orange from E10.
On the hour across Brighton and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.